The following recording is made available by Faith Community Bible Church. Information on how to obtain additional messages will be given at the end of the message.
Jesus said, "If you love me, keep my commandments." Part of his commandments are the 10 that we have been studying as we have been looking at the life of Moses. And I've enjoyed this little digression from the focus on Moses to the focus on the commandments. We certainly need it in the day in which we live. And the one we want to look at today is Exodus 20, verse 15. You don't need to turn there. I am certain that you know it. "Thou shalt not steal." Thou shalt not steal. One of the first traits of the sin nature which manifests itself early in the life of a child is selfishness. Children learn very early on to speak the word "mine." As a matter of fact, even before they can say it, they act it out. They carefully guard, cling to, and fight for what they believe belongs to them. They don't want anyone taking anything from them. We have to teach them to let go and to share. And the funny thing is that they don't seem to have a problem taking something that doesn't belong to them. Maybe we don't have so much of a problem with that as well. I can remember a time when Emily was very young. She probably was 5 or 6. And she had a lot of little friends in the neighborhood, and I'd go out and supervise her playtime with them. And I remember one particular time there was a little girl down the street, cute little girl, and she was playing with some of Emily's toys, and then it was time for us to go, and I saw her take this one toy, I can't even remember what it was, a doll or something, and she took this and she just very, very deceptively brought it behind her back and then put it underneath her coat. And I watched this whole thing, and she didn't know that I had seen her. And I says, "Well, Emily, come on, we have to go." I says, "Do you have your toy?" And she goes, "No." And she was looking around for it. And I looked at that little girl, and I said, "Did you see Emily's toy?" And she said, "No." I said, "Are you sure you didn't see it?" She said, "No." And I says, "Well, I know she had it here just a little while ago, and I can't see it anywhere." And then I looked at her and I said, "Honey," I said, "did you take it?" And she said, "No." And I said, "Are you sure you're not hiding it?" And she looked at me with, you know, those big eyes of hers, and just as sincerely as anyone could say it, she goes, "No." And I says, well, what's behind your coat?" And her countenance changed. And she knew it was found out. She was found out. And I had an opportunity to share with her, you know, about stealing. She was only 5 or 6. The 8th commandment, which we're going to consider today, is one that most of us might feel somewhat comfortable with. We're not like that little girl. So far, we all may feel that we have been guilty to some degree of violating the first 7 commandments. Even the commandment, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." We know the lust that has been in our hearts at times. But we haven't stolen anything. We're not thieves. Or are we? Maybe before I'm finished, we might have some confessing to do. Some changes to make, because this commandment is a very broad one that could be violated in many different ways. It has multiple applications. "Thou shalt not steal." Jonathan Edwards said this. He said, "The 10 commandments are not to be limited in the strictest sense of the words, but are to be understood in such latitude as to include all things that are of that nature or kind." What he's saying is there are many kinds of stealing. We know that Satan was a murderer from the beginning. He was also the original thief. In John chapter 10 and verse 10, "The thief cometh not but for to steal and to kill and destroy. I am come that they might have life and that they might have it more abundantly." Jesus, of course, is the one who is the light of the world. He's the one who gives life to all men. Satan is a thief, Jesus says. He comes to steal. And you say, well, what did he steal originally? Or what did he try to steal originally? Not much. He just wanted the throne of God. He wanted the throne of God as his own. He wanted to take the praise and the glory that was due his Creator. A sin of rebellion, a sin of pride, no doubt, but a sin of theft as well. We might say grand theft. Men and women today are still trying to steal God's praise and glory. There are many men in ministry who will receive no reward in heaven for some of their ministry because they got the praise of man on earth. And that is their reward. Genesis 2:16. "And the Lord commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden you may eat freely." I would say that's pretty generous, is it not? You can eat freely of all of the wonderful things that I have provided for you. "But of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, this one tree, you shall not eat of it, for in the day that you eat of it, you will surely die." And if you go to this story in Genesis chapter 3, it says in the first verse that the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field that the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, "Yea, hath God said, you shall not eat of the tree, of every tree of the garden?" And the woman said to the serpent, "We may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden. But of the fruit of the tree which is in the middle of the garden, God said, you shall not eat it, neither shall you touch it, lest you die." In other words, it's off limits. It's not yours. Every other thing you can have, but that is not yours. It's off limits. "And the serpent said unto the woman, you will not surely die." Satan tells a lot of lies that end in death. "For God knows that in the day you eat it, your eyes will be opened and you will be as gods, knowing good and evil." Quite a temptation. And they fell for it. "And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was pleasant to the eyes and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof." She stole something that wasn't hers. She took it. And then she gave that which was not hers to someone else, her husband, Adam, and he ate of it. Theologically, we know the high cost of the rebellion of Adam and Eve. They coveted something that didn't belong to them, and they took it. And the result was a world cursed with sin and suffering and death. We want to begin with some negative applications of this commandment. We'll consider the types of theft that are included under the prohibition, "Thou shalt not steal." The most obvious one is property theft. God gave men the right to the possession of private property. And property theft is to willfully take what does not belong to you. To take what belongs to someone else. Now that can be done in secret by deception or by other passive means. Or it can be done by force, even with violence. sometimes resulting in bodily harm or death to the victim. I mean, there are people who will take your life for the couple dollars you have in your wallet and think nothing of it. You can look in Proverbs chapter 1, in the 10th verse, it says, "My son," and I love the Proverbs. I mean, I try to read the Proverbs every day. I hope you do too. "My son, if sinners entice you, consent not to them. If they say, 'Come with us,' let us lay wait for blood. Let us lurk privately for the innocent without cause." They're looking for a victim. "Let us swallow them up alive as the grave and whole as those that go down into the pit. We will find all precious substance. We will fill our houses with spoil," with their goods, with what isn't ours, doesn't belong to us. "Cast in thy lot among us. Let us all have one purse." Be careful of the company that you keep. If I've said anything here over and over again, I've told the young people, choose your friends wisely. Choose your companions. An evil companion will corrupt good manners. If they say, "My son, walk not thou," or he says, "My son, walk not thou in the way with them. Refrain your foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of the bird, and they lay wait for their own blood. They lurk privily for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone that is greedy of gain, who taketh away the life of the owners thereof." Thieves sometimes will do anything for the fear of getting caught. Jesus in Luke chapter 10 in verse 30 tells us the story of the man who fell among thieves on the Jericho road. He said a certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves. And what did they do to him? They stripped him of his clothes, his raiment. They wounded him and they left him there half dead. As far as they were concerned, he could have died. They couldn't care less. They had his clothes. They had his purse. We live in some very evil days. You have to be very careful wherever you go. Well, the heart of theft is an unlawful change of position, or I guess position, from one to the other, or possession. And that's a huge problem for retailers. Matter of fact, did you know that the total of loss that retailers experienced last year due to theft was $40.5 billion. That's how much people stole from them. And did you know that one out of every 10 employees is a thief? Hey, you go into Walmart and you just start counting, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Are you a thief? I mean, one out of every 10 is a thief. You don't know who they are. The employers would like to know who they are. Man, I went to seminars when I worked in retail on loss prevention. I caught a couple of thieves. I always enjoyed catching thieves. I remember one time there was this guy who, we knew he was in our store. There was a group of people that were casing the place out, and they're easy to see. So we used to watch them from behind this glass that they didn't know. It was just one way we can see out, they couldn't see. And so we watched their every move. And, you know, we saw this one guy working with the team. We saw his buddies leave, and he went down to the drugstore, which was just a little ways across the parking lot. So we called the sheriff's department, and we got the guys that were in the store, and we knew the others were down the store stealing down there. So they came out of the store, and I walked out halfway into the parking lot. And it was this Mexican guy, and he was big and he was slow, and I was kind of younger and faster at that time. And he started running across the parking lot, and I started chasing him. And I just figured, you know, I'm not going to just tackle this guy. So I waited for his foot to come back up when he was running, and I caught the bottom of his foot. And he hit the concrete harder than anybody I ever saw in my life. When he hit the ground, I thought he was dead. I mean, he didn't move. He didn't need to do anything. The deputy sheriff came over and just handcuffed him, and he looked, he said, "What did you do to him?" I mean, that's just what he said to me. I said, well, you just fell, you know, with my help. And he had all this stuff underneath his coat. Employee theft accounted for $19 billion in losses last year. That's 47% of that $40.5 billion total. Shoplifters, they accounted for $13 billion, or 32% of the total. And the remainder of that total is due to vendor fraud and executive fraud and so forth. Do you ever see a retail advertisement along the lines of "we buy in bulk and pass the savings on to you"? I don't know, maybe that's an advertisement for fiber, I don't know. "We buy in bulk and pass the savings along to you." All good and well, right? All good and well. But who pays for the losses? If they pass the savings on to you, who pays for the losses due to retail theft? You know, sometimes you look at an item and you go, wow, $100 for that? Man, you guys are making a killing. I mean, there's a great profit margin in items. Well, there is profit margin, or businesses wouldn't be in business. But did you know that retailers pass all their losses off to you from theft? All of them. They do it in what is called a theft surcharge, which is the hidden markup in an item that you never see. It's there. Theft surcharge. And the average American spends $600 a year paying for theft and fraud that they didn't commit. Other people do the stealing, and you pay for what they stole. That's the way it works. Just think about it now. I mean, say you made, you know, cleared $600, your first paycheck of the new year. That will be entirely spent because someone else is a thief. And you're paying for their loss of the retailers. But theft is more than a crime committed against man. The unlawful taking of another's property is a sin against God as well as the victim of the theft. In Leviticus chapter 6, it makes this clear, the first verse. The Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, if a soul sins and commits, notice, a trespass, that's a sin, against the Lord. And then it mentions some of these. And lies to his neighbor in that which was delivered him to keep, he kept it for himself, or in fellowship, or in a thing taken away by violence, or hath deceived his neighbor. He sins against the Lord. Now, Philip Ryken says this: stealing is a sin against God in at least two ways. First, every theft is a failure to trust in God's provision. Every theft is a failure to trust God to supply all of your needs. Whenever we take something that doesn't belong to us, we deny that God has given us or is able to give us everything that we truly need. We'll be talking about this next week when we talk about coveting things. The failure to trust God to supply what you truly need. He says every theft is also an assault on God's providence for others. It robs what He has provided for someone else. I like the words of Agur, the prayer of Agur in Proverbs chapter 30 and verse 1. Agur said this: two things have I required of thee, deny me them not before I die. Lord, grant me these two things. Verse 8, remove far from me vanity and lies. Give me neither poverty nor riches. You ever pray like that? No, Lord, give me, just open up the heavens and pour out a blessing and make a lot of money. Give me neither poverty nor riches. You ever read the stories of what happens to people who win large amounts of money in the lottery? And then he says, feed me with food convenient for me. The things I really need. Lest I be fool and deny thee and say, who is the Lord? Hey, a rich man doesn't need the Lord. Or lest I be poor and steal and take the name of my God in vain. Did you ever equate the two of those things? Stealing and taking the name of God in vain. Let me give you an example as a Christian. We're going to talk about this next. Theft of time from your employer. Well, you're a great Christian testimony. You know, you witness for the Lord and you tell them about tracts and or tell them about the Lord and hand out tracts and then you're stealing their time in front of the very people, stealing the employer's time in front of the very people that you're witnessing to. What does it say about your testimony? Your Christian testimony. Theft of time. I believe Christians must work hard for their employer. I think they need to go beyond what is asked of them. They need to work hard. There are many Christians who would never think of stealing an item from their employer. Not so much as a pencil, but they think nothing of surfing the net or communicating by phone or email with people about things that are not relevant to their job. I worked for an employer one time, and they had a policy, and the policy was this. You did not talk to anybody at work on the telephone. You made no outside calls. You received no outside calls unless they were of an emergency nature, unless you were working late and told your wife you were coming home late. First violation, a warning. Second violation, a warning. Third violation, you're fired. That was their policy. And everybody knew they meant what they said. And they did it. And they also had a policy about coming late to work. If the starting time was 7 o'clock and you punched in at 7:01, you were late. First violation, a warning. Second violation, a warning. Third violation, you're fired. Unless you had a legitimate reason for being late and you could document that. That was their policy. And everybody knew it. And I'll tell you what, everybody showed up on time. For the most part. They learned to. Question, I read this. Do you steal your employer's time by doing personal business while at the job, on the job, by surfing the internet, by using office resources for personal reasons? Do you steal from your employer by hindering others from doing their jobs, taking their time needlessly, socializing, distracting them from the work that they are being paid to do, even if you're not doing your own? In a survey of over 1,400 companies, the majority of employers ranked honesty and integrity as qualities that impress them the most in job candidates. Of course, they would include the obvious things like not stealing money or materials from the job, but even more important is not stealing your employer's time. An employment agency, listen to this, conducted a study that revealed that time theft averaged over 4 hours, somewhere in the neighborhood of 4 to 6 hours per employee per week. Think of what the total of that is. Think of how much money they are losing because their employees are not doing their job and they're being paid for it. He says these employees tended to be late, leave early, socialized a lot when they should have been working. So what are companies doing now? Unknown to many of the employees, they're using computer monitoring, telephone taping, GPS satellite tracking. I know an employer who had a landscape business who had to put a GPS satellite tracking on all of his trucks so he knew where his employees were going, if they were actually going to the job. You know this fellow too. They use other methods of surveillance. Why? Because they're being ripped off. And if you would ask those people, you know, those employees, they, well, I didn't steal anything. You most certainly did. Here's some lesser known violations of the Eighth Commandment. Violation of copyright laws. Listen, let me ask you a question. Young people, old people, doesn't matter. Have you ever downloaded music that you didn't pay for? Maybe built a collection up? Now, some songs I know, they allow you to download the samples or a song or whatever it is. But I've known people, sadly even Christians, who've downloaded all kind of music illegally. How about software theft? How about taking software license that's restricted and using it in other applications? How many people have done that? They think nothing of that as theft. Here's another one. How about littering? Littering. Or other acts of negligence that result in costs to someone other than you. How much money do you think is spent on cleaning up litter in this country? Who pays for it? Not the person throwing the bag out the window. You're stealing from somebody when you do that, because it results in an economic loss to them. Somebody has to clean it up. How about unjustified lawsuits? Now, our country is inundated with, unjustified lawsuits. And it'll go on and on and on, because there's a lot of money in it. How about bankruptcy? Robert Diffenbaugh says, bankruptcy can be a means for structuring the payback of debts, and that is honorable. But as a legal pretext for the non-payment of debts, it is robbery. Wow. Those are hard words. Just to get out from underneath your debts? Who picks up the loss? Ecclesiastes 5:4 says this, and I try to live by this. When you vow a vow unto God, defer not to pay it. In other words, when you sign a contract that you're going to pay back, you're telling that person, that company, you will pay this money back. But you're doing it before God as well. For he hath no pleasure in fools. Pay that which you have vowed. Better is he that thou shouldest not vow than that you should vow and not pay. How about Psalm 37 verse 21? The wicked borroweth and payeth not again. Wow, those are harsh words as well. Now, I know that bankruptcy can be due to legitimate reasons. Business is failure. It's possible to get in over your head, but much of it is due to reckless indebtedness. And of course, we all know about credit card debt. Credit card companies, why do you think your mailbox is full of offers from credit card companies? Hey, they want you for life. So they'll give you an introductory offer that looks good, and they know that once you start charging and once you accumulate a certain amount on that card, typically over $4,000 or $5,000, they have you for life. Yeah, you'll spend the rest of your days. You young people going off to college, they're going to offer you a credit card. You know, don't take it. At least not their offer. They want you early, and they want you for life. I talked to a young man one time when I was working somewhere else, and he came back from his honeymoon, and I said, how did it go? He says he had a wonderful time, and he told me where he went, and he took some of the money that they received from the wedding, and they went, and in addition to some of the cash that he had, he told me that, he says, well, I got to work hard now, because he said, I charged $15,000 on his honeymoon. I wonder if he's still married. That's a great way to start off in marriage, isn't it? Hey, honey, you have $15,000 debt. Listen, I talked to someone just a couple weeks ago who told me about someone that they know very close to them, and it's someone I know as well. And their credit card debt, currently, credit card, $35,000 on a credit card. Now, how many lifetimes do you think it will take to pay that one back at 14% interest or 21%, whatever it is? $35,000 on a credit card. Wow. Yo. Reckless indebtedness. Our country is full of it. Proverbs 22:7 says this, "The rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is the slave to the lender." Mark that down. Romans 13:8 says, "Owe no man anything but to love one another, for he that loveth another hath fulfilled the law." Now, that's a great principle. I don't believe that it means you're absolutely forbidden to take out a loan. But it does forbid failing to meet the obligations of a loan. That's what it means. It means the only true debt that we can never satisfy is the debt that we have to love one another. That's a debt that we could never satisfy. We have to keep loving one another. But we make every sincere effort to pay off all of our debts. Listen, if I borrow $5 from you, I'll pay it back. Yesterday, I went into 7-Eleven, took Marie to work early in the morning, and I have a refill cup. You know, I bought that cup because I'm cheap. Yeah, why should I go to Starbucks and pay $3.69 if I need a coffee? I can get a refill for a dollar at 7-Eleven. You know, I just use their cup. So I went in and I filled it all up and I went to the counter and I went, no wallet. So I looked for a nice guy to borrow a dollar off. There was nobody in the store. So I went up to the gal and I said, "I just filled this cup up." I says, "It's, you know, the refill deal." I says, "And I forgot my wallet." I said, "You want me to leave the cup here?" I says, "I'll go get the dollar." And she looked at me and she said, "No." She said, "That's okay." She said, "I trust you. For a dollar." So I went home and I didn't rush right back. I knew she was on all day. And, you know, right after lunch, a couple hours later, I went back to that 7-Eleven and I took her the dollar. And she was almost shocked. She was almost surprised that I came back to give her a dollar for coffee that, you know, just a refill of coffee. And she was very thankful. But that's the way we should be all the time with everything, every one of us. Pay our debts. There is theft by taking advantage of someone. Well, hold on now, okay? You're thankful so far I haven't hit you. I am just about to. Here's the scenario. An elderly woman's husband recently died. She's forced to move, and so she has a garage sale to sell his tool collection. She knows nothing about the value of his tools. You're the first customer who shows up and you offer her pennies on a dollar for those tools. Then you walk away bragging to friends what a great deal you got. But is a great deal at the expense of an ignorant party a great deal? Or is it a form of theft? By the letter of the law, you haven't stolen anything. You paid exactly what was marked. But here's the question. Have you treated that poor widow justly? Is that what the Bible would call a dishonest gain? An ill-gotten gain from a widow? You see, God's standards are so much higher than what we have become accustomed to. If you manage to pull the wool over someone's eyes, who's really in the dark? You. Luther said we break the eighth commandment whenever we take advantage of someone in a sort of a deal that results in loss to him. All right, we're taught to deal. We're taught to be wheelers and dealers. But there is a point at which, a line at which we cross when it really is dishonest gain. And we need to think about that. We need to be more sensitive. That's what I am saying. I knew a man who was a collector of art. And he went into a shop where the people in the shop, it was one of these antique shops, and they were just getting started, and they really knew nothing. And they had a very valuable piece of furniture with a painting on the side of it. And this person that I knew that they didn't know what they had. And he offered them $500 for it, and they took it. They took it. He sold it. And it was worth $15,000. Good deal or dishonest gain? The world's ethics or God's higher ethics? I know there are many Christian salesmen who, for the sake of a larger commission, would think nothing of holding back the truth about that great, great deal that they're selling this new car for. I've been through sales seminars, and what they taught you was that the secret of successful selling is to build up the value of a product. Then someone's likely to buy it. Build up the value of a product. You know, as a salesman, it's not worth that. But if you give me your attention for 10 minutes, I will tell you just what you're getting. And I'm lying in the process, because I know the true value of it. And I'm not worried about the deal you're getting. I'm worried about the commission I'm getting. Another one is the failure to return lost property. Finders, keepers, losers, weepers. Is that what we really want to teach our children? Finders, keepers, losers, weepers. Now, there's an application. Sometimes you don't know. You find something and that's it. It's the end of it. You can't return it to a person. But Leviticus 6:2 says this. We read this already. If a soul sins and commits a trespass against the Lord and lies unto his neighbor in something that was delivered him to keep, or in fellowship, or in a thing taken away by violence, or has deceived his neighbor, or notice in verse 3, or hath found that which is lost and lies concerning it, and swears falsely in any of these things a man doeth, sinning therein, then it shall be, because he hath sinned and is guilty, that he shall restore that which he took violently away, or the thing which he hath deceitfully gotten, or that which was delivered him to keep, or the lost thing which he has found. Matter of fact, turn quickly to Deuteronomy 22. Deuteronomy chapter 22, so you don't fall asleep on me. Verse 1. Thou shalt not see thy brother's ox or his sheep go astray, and hide thyself from them. Thou shalt in any way bring them again to your brother. And if your brother be not near you, or if you know not where he is, then you will bring it into thine own house, and it shall be with thee until thy brother seeks after it, and thou shalt restore it to him again. In like manner thou shalt do with his ass, thou shalt do with his clothes, and with all lost things that belong to your brother that he has lost and you have found, you shall do likewise. Thou mayest not hide thyself. Wow. I remember an Andy Griffith story. Saw this not long ago. And there's little Opie found a wallet. You remember that one? He found a wallet and there was $50 in it. And he took it back to his dad and to Barney, and they says, "Well, you know, we're going to put it here in the drawer and for 1 week. And, you know, 1 week from now at 3 o'clock, if no one claims it, it's yours." And he was already spending it, right in his mind. And the week passed. And they gave him the $50, and he ran down to the store, I think, to buy a fishing rod it was. And he wanted to spend the whole thing. Andy says, "No, you spend 10, put 40 in the bank." But the point was, you know, he had it. Well, what happened was the man who lost the wallet came back, and Opie was there in the sheriff's office. His dad was gone, and he wanted to talk to the sheriff about losing his wallet. And you could just see Opie's heart sank. You know, he had all the money in the piggy bank already. He had the fishing rod. And he went home and he broke the piggy bank and he took the money out and he went back to the store to give the fishing rod and the $40 back. And when his dad saw, Andy saw that he broke the piggy bank, he was furious. He thought he went out to spend it after he found out that someone had come and claimed the wallet. The moral of the story was little Opie knew that it was wrong for him to keep it, even after the deadline had passed, because it had a rightful owner. You ever borrow anything from anybody and not return it? You've stolen. I won a contest one time in a store. I won a reciprocating saw. I never had a really reciprocating saw. I was looking forward to having that saw. I won it legitimately in an employee contest for sales. One guy asked me if he could borrow it. Oh yeah, I gave him the saw. And I never saw it again. Ever. About 2 months later, he was still using it. About 3 months later, he left town with my saw. And if he ever hears this message, return it, Walter. It's still out there. Stealing, that's stealing. Charging high interest on a loan is theft. We're all being ripped off, right? Exodus 22:25 says, if you lend money to any of the people that is poor by thee, thou shalt not be to him as a usurer, neither shalt thou lay upon him usury. That means an excessive rate of interest. It's wrong. And then we certainly can't forget Malachi 3:8, stealing from God. Who would ever think of that? I'm not talking about taking the piano or the hymn books or the tables you haven't returned. Will a man rob God? That's bold. Who would think of such a thing? Yet you have robbed me. You have stolen from me. But you say, wherein have we robbed you? We haven't gone into the temple treasury. Wherein have we robbed you? In tithes and offerings. In your giving. Everyone has an obligation to give unto the Lord. I'm not telling you how much to give. The Old Testament law was 10%. But there were other taxes as well. Amounted to about 22.5% of a person's income in the Old Testament. Was not theirs. The temple taxes, the taxes for the support of the priest and so forth, right off the top, was considered God's. In the New Testament, which says we're to give cheerfully. I think we're to give above and beyond the law. How much do you give to God? How much do you give for the support of the gospel? How much do you give to people in need? Just charitable giving. You can't if you're saturated in debt. We Christians have a higher calling, and that leads to the positive applications of the eighth commandment. Number one, we are God's stewards. We're stewards of everything that God has given, so don't be wasteful. Don't be wasteful. Listen, that applies to more than just the food that's put on your table. Just think of how much money in food goes down in the garbage in this country. Maybe in your house. Look, my dad had one rule when we sat at the table. Clean your plate. Yeah. That was it. That was his rule. Oh, two rules. I'm sorry. You stayed there until he said you're allowed to go, and when you left, you better make sure your plate is clean. Whatever you put on your plate, you better make sure you ate. That was it. And I pretty much clean a plate anytime I sit down to eat to this day. wastefulness. Do you really need all those toys and tools? Do you really need all of them? Do you really need all the latest high-tech gadgets? You know, there's a driving law now in effect in California. It has to be a hands-free law on cell phones when you're driving on July 1st. So you can go out and get a $150 hands-free device, $50, or you can go to a 99-cent store and buy one. That's where I'm going. 99-cent store, right. I'm just really taking inventory of my own life. Do I really need everything? What can I give away? What can I do without? It's better to travel light. You don't know where the Lord is going to take you. You don't know how quickly He's going to want you to go. Each year, here's a form of waste. Each year, Americans spend more money on gambling than they do food and clothing. Yeah. Many parents are literally stealing wholesome meals from their children because they've spent the money at Sequan or Rincon or Barona or lottery tickets or Vegas. A lot of Christians think gambling isn't a sin. I'm not going to get into it. I believe it is. That's it. I think it's a waste of money that can go to much better causes than your desire to be rich. Secondly, work hard in all that you do. My grandfather had a great principle, grew up in the coal mines, worked as a breaker boy when he was 9, 10 hours a day. Picking the coal from the slate and the rock. Tommy, he'd always tell me, don't be lazy. Don't be lazy. Ephesians 4:8 says, let him that steals steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands. There's a lot of satisfaction with that, isn't that? A day's wages for a day's work. Whatever it is you do, working with your hands or your mind. Why? So you can have a lot for yourself. The harder you work, the more money you make, the more things you can buy. Working with his hands, the thing which is good that he may have to give to someone who has a need. That's a higher ethic, isn't it? You're not out there working just for yourself. And I'm not saying it's wrong to have some things. I'm not saying that at all. But do you really need everything? Maybe some of it can go somewhere else. Listen, I don't want to pat myself on the back. Because I've got a heart as every bit as covetous as you, and as idolatrous as you, and as full of idols as yours, if I'm not in the Word of God and I don't allow the Word of God to govern my thinking. But I was driving to work the other day, and I was driving with Emily in my truck, and she said, Dad, you need a new truck. Guess who wants the new truck? I said, why? I said, this one gets me where I'm going. She said, Dad, it's falling apart. I said, well, it's just really cosmetic stuff. And she looked at me and she said, Dad, I wish I could be as content as you. And I prayed, God, make her content. Give her contentedness in her heart. And that's my prayer for me. Because I can see something that I want. And I have to deal with that in my own heart. Covetousness and a lack of contentedness. Be content with such things as you have. The Bible condemns laziness because it fosters which fosters poverty and a temptation to steal. There are people who are legitimately poor. They're born in poverty. And they do need a helping hand. They do need a hand up, not just a hand out. The welfare system in America just has fostered poverty. It hasn't delivered people from poverty. But the Bible condemns laziness because it fosters poverty and a temptation to steal. Notice that proverb begin from verse 30. Proverbs 38, remove from me vanity and lies, give me neither poverty nor riches, feed me with food convenient for me, lest I be full and deny thee and say, who is the Lord? Don't need him. Or lest I be poor and steal and take the name of my God in vain. Listen, I was young before I was saved. My friends were going camping. My buddy, I wanted to go camping too. I needed a sleeping bag. I didn't have a sleeping bag. My sleeping bag was a blanket. I didn't have a sleeping bag. So I said, I'm going to get me a sleeping bag. So I went with a friend of mine and we devised this elaborate plan how we were going to steal sleeping bags at a W.F. Grant store. They're since out of business. No wonder why. They were just like a Kmart. So here was our elaborate plan. We walked into the store, went straight back to the back of the store. It was in the furthest part of the store. The sporting goods store, I looked at the sleeping bags. They were packaged in a little wrap, whatever it is. I says, well, I like that one right there. I grabbed one. He grabbed one. We walked out. We walked up to the front of the store. We looked at the people at the counters, and we walked out the store. And we didn't run in the parking lot. We walked in our car, got in our car, and drove away. And that night, I was camping with my stolen sleeping bag. And I didn't feel bad about it at all. I felt good about it. You're thinking I felt bad about it. No. Heart is deceitful above all and desperately wicked. Till you come to Christ and get it all cleansed. Over the years, your conscience is seared more and more. When I was a young boy, I wouldn't steal a piece of candy from a candy store because I was taught that it was wrong. And my conscience was sensitive. But as I grew older and older, I lost that sensitivity. My conscience was seared with a hot iron so I can go into a store and steal a sleeping bag and think nothing of it at all. Proverbs 13, 4 says, the soul of the sluggard desires and has nothing, but the soul of the diligent will be made fat, those who work hard. Proverbs 24, the sluggard will not plow by reason of the cold. He has all kinds of excuses why he shouldn't work. Therefore shall he beg and harvest and have nothing. And then Proverbs 21, 5, the desire of the slothful kills him, for his hands refuse to labor. These are just a few of the commands in the Scripture that tell us we need to work. Work is good. Work is honorable. And we need to work hard. Finally, and we conclude with this, share your blessings. And I'm going to conclude with one quote from Jerry Bridges. Jerry Bridges has observed that there are three basic attitudes we can take toward possessions. What is yours? Three basic attitudes that you can have toward possessions. The first says, what's yours is mine, I'll take it. And we've been talking about that this morning. It's the attitude of the thief. What is yours is mine, I'll take it. The second says, what's mine is mine, I'll keep it. We've never outgrown our infancy. What's mine is mine, I'll keep it. Since we are selfish by nature, this is the attitude that most people have most of the time. And the third attitude, the godly attitude, says, what's mine is God's. I'll share it. What's mine is God's. I'll share it. How about that verse in the bulletin, Let him that steals steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good, that he may give to someone who has a need. That's the godly attitude. I hope it's mine. Lord, make it mine. I hope it's yours. Lord, make it theirs.
If you would like a list of other audio messages or other resources available from Faith Community Bible Church, please write to us at 2375 Center Place, El Cajon, California, 92020. The telephone number is 619-461-2245. Thanks for listening.